Osho. No water, no moon. Talks on Zen stories. Discourse number 2. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Debates are futile and stupid. Debate as such is foolish, because no one can reach through discussion, through debate, to the truth. You may get a night's shelter, but that's all. Hence the tradition. The tradition is beautiful. In any Zen monastery in Japan, for many centuries, if you ask for a shelter in a Zen monastery, you have to discuss. If you win the debate, for the night you can stay. This is very symbolic, but only for the night. The morning you have to move on. This indicates that through debate, logic, reasoning, you can never reach the goal, only a night's shelter. And don't deceive yourself that the night's shelter is the goal. You have to move on. In the morning, you have to again to be on feet. But many have deceived themselves. They think that whatsoever they have attained through logic is the goal. The night shelter has become the ultimate. They are not moving, and many mornings have passed. Logic can lead to hypothetical conclusions, never to truth. logic can lead to something which approximates truth, but never to the truth. And remember, that which approximates the truth is also a lie. Because what it means, either something is true or not true, there is no in between. Either something is true or it is not true. You cannot say that this is a half-truth. There is nothing like that. Just like there cannot be a half-circle. Because the very word circle means the full. Half-circles don't exist. If it is half, it is not a circle. Half-truths don't exist. Truth is the whole. You cannot have it in fragments. You cannot have it in parts. Approximate truth is a deception. But logic can lead only to the deception. You may have a shelter in the night just to retire, relax, but don't make it your home. By the morning you have to move again. The journey cannot end there. Every morning it will begin again and again. Relax in the logic, in the reasoning. But don't remain with it. Don't become static with it. And continuously remember that you have to move. The tradition is beautiful. So one thing to be understood about the tradition and the meaning, it is symbolic. Second thing, all discussions are foolish because through the mood of discussion, you can never understand the other. Whatsoever he says is misunderstood. A mind who is bent on winning, conquering, cannot understand. It is impossible because understanding needs a non-violent mind. When you are looking how to be victorious, you are violent. Debate is a violence. You can kill through it. You cannot revive through it. You cannot give life through it. You can murder through it. Truths can be murdered through debate, but they cannot be resurrected. It is violence. The very attitude is violent. Really, you are not asking for the truth, you are asking for the victory. When victory is the goal, truth will be sacrificed. When truth is the goal, you can sacrifice victory also. And truth should be the goal, not victory. Because when victory is the goal, you are a politician. Not a religious man. You are aggressive. You are trying somehow to overpower the other. You are trying somehow to dominate and domineer. Then, and truth can never become a domination. It can never destroy the other. Truth can never be a victory in the sense that you have overpowered others. Truth brings humility, humbleness. It is not an ego trip, but All debates are ego trips. So debate can never lead to the real. It always leads to the unreal, the untrue. Because the very phenomena that you are after victory is stupid. Truth wins, not you, not I. In discussion you win, or I win. Truth never wins. Real seekers will allow the truth to win both. Debaters are asking that the victory should belong to me. It should not belong to the other. In truth there is no other. In truth we meet and become one. So who can be the winner and who can be the loser? In truth no one is defeated. In truth, truth wins and we are last. But in discussion I am I and you are you. Really there is no bridge. How can you understand the other when you are against him? Understanding is impossible. Understanding needs empathy. Understanding needs a participation. Understanding means listening to the other totally. Only then understanding flowers. But if you are discussing something, debating, arguing, reasoning, you are not listening to the other. You only pretend that you are listening. Deep down you are preparing. Deep down you have already moved to the further step. When the other stops what you are going to say, you are getting ready. How to refute him? You have not listened to him and you are trying how to refute him. Really, truth is not significant in a discussion, in a debate. So debate is never a communication. And it is impossible through debate to come to a communion. You can argue, and the more you argue, you fall apart. The more you argue, the gap is bigger. It becomes an abyss. There can be no meeting ground. That's why philosophers never meet. Pundits never meet. They are great arguers. An abyss exists. They cannot meet with the others. Impossible. Only lovers can meet, but lovers cannot be in a debate. They can communicate. That's why so much insistence in the East for Shraddha, trust, faith. If you argue with your master, the gap widens. Then it is better to move. Then let this master be a night center. But move. Being with him will not lead you anywhere. The gap will widen. If you are argumentative, then the gap cannot be bridged. It is impossible. Trust means sympathy. Trust means you are not arguing. You have come to listen, not to argue. You have come to understand, not to debate. You have not come to win. Rather, you are ready to lose. A real disciple is always in search of being defeated by the master. That is the greatest moment in the life of the disciple. When he is completely distired and defeated. Not that the master is going to win. He is going to be defeated. The disciple is going to be defeated. And when the disciple is no more there, completely defeated, disappeared, only then the gap is bridged, the abyss is gone, and the master can penetrate you. Hence it happened, Jesus was wandering all over his country, but all the disciples that he could gather were simple men, not a single educated person, not a single scholar. Not that there were not scholars, there were great scholars at that time. Jews were at their peak of glory. That's why they could produce such a son like Jesus. Jesus was the culmination. Jesus could happen. That's so that the Jews touched their peak. Never again they will reach to such a peak. There were great scholars. Great debates were arranged. The Jewish synagogue was the seat of learning, a real university. People will travel from all over the country to discuss, to debate, to argue, to find. But it was an argument. Not a single scholar followed Jesus. Really, all the scholars were unanimous. They agreed that this man should be destroyed. All the scholars, learned people, were ready to kill this man. Why? Because this man was against argument. He was pulling their very base. The whole structure will fall down. This man was saying something against reason. He was talking about faith. He was talking about love. He was talking about how to create a bridge between two hearts. Debate is between two minds, two heads. Love, communication, trust is between two hearts. He was opening a new route of friendship, of discipleship, of growth. He was thinking in terms of a totally different dimension. The quality was different. He was saying, put aside your scriptures. Your Bibles are not needed because they are only words. The scholar, the pundit couldn't tolerate. Jesus was crucified. He could find only simple people, a fisherman, a woodcutter, a shoemaker, simple men. All his disciples except Judas were uneducated. Only Judas was really a cultured, refined gentleman. And he sold Jesus in 30 rupees. This cultured, refined Judas betrayed. And Jesus knew it, that if anybody can betray him, it is Judas. Why? Because the heart can be betrayed only by the head. The love can be only betrayed by logic. Nothing else can betray it. So this is the second thing to remember before I enter in the story. That through logic, through the head, argumentativeness, you become aligned, strangers to each other. The bridge between is lost. How can you reach to the truth when you cannot understand the other? When you are not even capable to listen to him? When your mind goes on and on inside, arguing, fighting, you are violent, aggressive. This aggression will not help. So all debates are futile. They never lead anywhere. Even if you feel that a conclusion is reached, the conclusion is forced, it is not reached. Through discussion, you can silence the other, but never conviction comes out of it. Never. And I say it categorically, never. If you have some logical tricks, you can silence the other. He may not be able to answer you. You know more than he knows. You know more tricks than he knows. You can put him in a corner through words and reasoning, and he is unable to answer. But this is not the way to convince him. Deep down he knows that someday I will find more tricks and put you right in your place. Right now I cannot answer, okay, I accept defeat. He is defeated but not won. And these are two different things. When you win a hurt, he is not defeated. He is happy. He is victorious in your victory. He participates. It is not your victory. Truth has won and you both can celebrate. But when you defeat a person, he is never won. He remains the enemy. Deep down, he is waiting for the right moment when he can assert. No debate can become a conviction. And if conviction is not reached, where is the conclusion? The conclusion is forced. It is always premature. It is just like an abortion. It is not a natural birth. You have forced a dead child is born, or a crippled child who is going to remain crippled, weak and dead the whole life. Socrates used to say that I am a midwife. I help natural birth. A master is a midwife. He is not going to force, because a forced birth cannot be a real birth. It is more like death and less like life. So a master is never argumentative. And if sometimes he appears to be argumentative, he is just playing with you. And playing for a certain reason. Don't become a victim. He is playing for a certain reason. He can be argumentative just to find whether your argumentativeness is aroused or not. If it is aroused, you have missed. If you can listen to his argumentativeness without becoming argumentative, he will not play the game with you. He has to look within you. You may be consciously listening, unconsciously argumentative. Then he has to bring your unconscious up so that you can become aware of it. Sometimes a master will look as if he is aggressive, as if he is bent upon to defeat you. But he is never bent upon to defeat you. Just to defeat your ego, not you. Just to destroy your ego, not you. And remember, the ego is the poison. It is destroying you. Once the poison is destroyed, you will be for the first time free and alive. And the abundance of life will happen to you for the first time. He is destroying the disease, not you. Sometimes he may have to be argumentative. There have been masters who were very argumentative. It was impossible to defeat them, impossible to play the game of the words with them. But they were just helping to bring your unconscious up so that you can become aware whether your faith is true or not. It happened, a Sufi, Junaid, was living with his master. And the master was so argumentative that whatsoever you say, he will immediately negate. If you say it is a day, he will say no, it is night. And it is really not so. It is a day. Whatsoever Junaid will say, he will always find that he will negate. And he will simply bow down his head and he will say, yes, master, it is night. One day the master said, Junaid, you have won. I couldn't create argumentativeness in you. And I was so obviously false that anybody who has never argued anything will say that what foolishness, this is a day. There is no need to argue, it is so obvious. And still you said, yes, master, it is night. Your trust is deep. Now I will never be argumentative with you. Now I can talk truth because you are ready. When the heart says yes, totally, then you are ready to listen. And then only the truth can be revealed to you. Even if a slight no remains within you, the truth cannot be said to you. Because that no will destroy the whole thing. The no, howsoever small, is powerful, very powerful. Then the truth will be said, but it will not be revealed to you. The no will hide it again. That's why I say all debates are futile. And that's why I go on repeating again and again that the whole effort of philosophy has been useless. It has not reached to any conclusion. It cannot reach. I will tell you one story, then I will enter this Jain anecdote. Once it happened, a great prime minister of a very great emperor died. The prime minister was rare, very intelligent, almost wise, very cunning, shrewd, a great diplomat, and it was very difficult to find a substitute. So the whole kingdom was searched. All the ministers were sent to find at least three persons. Then the final decision will be taken and one of them will be chosen. For months the search was on. The whole kingdom was looked. Every nook and corner was searched. Then three persons were found. One was a great scientist, a great mathematician. He could solve any mathematical problem. And mathematics is really the only positive science. All sciences are its branches. So he was at the root. Another was a great philosopher. He was a great system maker. out of nothing he could create all. Just out of words he could create such beautiful systems. It is a miracle. Only philosophers can do it. They have nothing in their hand. They are the greatest magicians. They create God. They create the theory of creation. They create everything. And nothing is there in their hands. But they are clever artisans of words. They join words together in such a way that they give you a feeling of substance, and nothing is there. And the third one was a religious man, a man of faith, prayer, devotion. And the persons who were searching for these three men must have been very wise, because they had found three. These three represent three dimensions of consciousness. These are the only possibilities. A man of science, a man of philosophy, and a man of religion, these are the basis. A man of science is concerned with experiments. Unless something is proved through experiment, it is not proved. He is empirical, experimental. His truth is the truth of experiment. A man of philosophy is a man of logic, not of experiment. Experiment is not the question. Just through logic, he proves, disproves. He is a pure man, purer than the scientist, because the scientist has to bring experiments in, the laboratory comes in. A man of philosophy works without a lab, just in the mind, with logic, with mathematics. His whole lab is in his mind. He can prove and disprove just through logical arguments. He can solve any riddles, or he can create any type of riddles. And third is the religious dimension. This man does not look at life as a problem. Life is not a problem for a religious man. It is nothing to be solved. It is something to be lived. The religious man is the man of experience. The scientist is the man of experiment. The philosopher is the man of thinking. The religious is the man of experience. He looks at life something to be lived. If there is any solution, it will come through experience. It will come through living. Nothing can be decided beforehand through logic, because life is greater than logic. Logic is just a bubble in the vast ocean of life, so it cannot explain all. An experiment can be done only when you are detached. Experiment can be done only with objects. Life is not an object. It is the very core of subjectivity. When you experiment, you are different. When you live, you are one. So the religious man says, unless you are one with life, you can never know it. How can you know it? From the outside, you may go about and about, around and around, but you will never hit the target. So neither experiment nor thinking, but experience, simple, trusting, a man of faith. They searched and they found these three men, and then they were called to the capital for the final judgment. The king said, for 3 days you rest and get ready. 4th day morning will be the examination, the final. One out of you will be chosen and he will become my prime minister. One who is proved to be the most wise. They started working in their own ways. 3 days were not enough. The scientists had to think of many experiments and work it out. Who knows what type of examination is going to be there? So he couldn't sleep for 3 days. There was no time. And there was whole life to sleep once he is chosen. So why bother for sleep? He will not sleep. He will not eat. There was not time enough. And many things were to be done before the examination. The philosopher started thinking. Many problems were to be solved. Who knows what type of problem is going to be asked? Only the religious man was at ease. He will eat and eat well. Only a religious man can eat well. Because eating is an offering. It is something sacred. He will sleep well. He will pray. Sit outside, go for a walk, look at the trees, and be thankful for God. Because for religious men there is no future. And there is no final examination. Every moment is the examination. So you, how can you prepare for it? If something is in the future, you can prepare. But if something is right now here, how can you prepare? You have to face it. And there was no future. Sometimes the scientist said to him, what are you doing? Wasting time? Eating, sleeping, prayer? You can do your prayers, let run. But he will laugh and he will not argue. He was not a man of argument. The philosopher will say, you go on sleeping, you go on sitting outside in the garden, go on looking at the trees, this is not going to help. Examination is not a child's play. You have to be ready for it. But he will laugh. He believed more in laughter than in logic. And the 4th day morning, when they started for the palace, for the final examination, the scientist was not in a position even to walk. He was so tired with his experiments, as if his whole life oozed out. He was dead tired, as if any moment he will fall and go to sleep. His eyes were sleepy and his mind was troubled. He was almost crazy. And the philosopher, he was not so tired, but he was more uncertain than ever. Because he thought and thought and argued and argued, and no argument can become the conclusion. He was muddled in a mess. He was a chaos. The day he had come, he could have answered many things, but now, no. Even his certain answers have become uncertain. The more you think, the more philosophy becomes useless. Only fools can believe in certainties. The more you think, the more intelligence comes to you. You can look that these all are words, there is no substance. Many times he wanted to go back because this is not going to be of any use. He is not in the right shape. But the scientist said, come on, let us try. What we are going to lose? If we win, it is okay. If we don't win, it is okay. But let us try. Don't be so discouraged. Only the religious man was walking happy, singing. He could hear the birds in the trees. He could see the sun rising. He could see the sun rays on the dewdrops. The whole life was such a miracle. He was not worried because there was no examination. He will go and face the thing. He will simply go and see what happens. And he was not asking anything. He was not expecting. He was fresh, young, alive. And that's all. That's how one should go to the God. Not with ready-made formulas. Not with ready-made theories. Not with many experimental research work. Not with many PhDs. No, it is not going to help. This is the way how one should go singing and dancing to the temple. And if you are alive, then whatsoever comes, you can respond. Because response is through life. It is through the heart. And heart is ready when it is singing, when it is dancing. They reached. The king, the emperor has made a very special device. They were entered into a room and he has fixed a lock, a mathematical puzzle. Many figures were on the lock. There was no key. Those figures were to be fixed in a certain way. The secret was there, but one has to search it and find it. And if those figures were fixed in a certain way, the door will open. The emperor entered them in and said, this is a mathematical puzzle, one of the greatest ever known. Now, you have to find the clue. There is no key. If you can find the clue, the answer to this mathematical problem, the lock will open. And the person who comes first out of this room will be chosen. So now you start. He closed the door, went out. Immediately the scientist started working on paper. Many experiments, many things, many problems. He watched, observed the figures on the lock. There was no time to lose. It was a question of life and death. And the philosopher closed his eyes. He started thinking in mathematical terms what to do, how this puzzle can be solved. The puzzle was absolutely new. That is the problem. With the mind, if something is old, the answer can be found. But if something is absolutely new, how can you work it out through the mind? The mind is quite efficient with the old, the known, the routine. Mind is absolutely inefficient when the unknown faces it. The religious man never went to the lock. Because what can he do? He does not know any mathematics, he does not know any experimental science. What can he do? He just sat in a corner, he sang a little, prayed to the God, closed his eyes. Those two others were thinking that he is not a competitor at all. In a way it is good, because the thing has to be decided between us two. Then suddenly they became aware that he has left the room, he is not there. The door was open. The king came in and he said, what are you doing now? Finished. The third man is out. But they asked, how? Because he never did anything. So they asked the religious man. He said, I was just sitting, I prayed. And I was just sitting and a voice said within me, "You fool, just go and see, the door is not locked." And I just went to the door, it was not locked. There was no problem at all to be solved. So I went out. Life is not a problem. If you are trying to solve it, you will miss it. The door is open. It has never been locked. If the door was locked, then scientists will find the solution. If the door was locked, then philosophers may find a system how to open it. But the door is not locked. So only faith can go without any solution, without any answer ready made. Push the door and get out. Life is not a riddle to be solved. It is a mystery to be lived. It is a deep mystery to trust and allow yourself to enter into it. No debate can be of any help with somebody else or with yourself inside the mind. No debate. All debates are futile and stupid. Now we will enter this beautiful story. There is an old tradition in some Japanese temples that if a wandering monk can win an argument about Buddhism with one of the resident monks, he can stay the night. If not, he has to move on. Arguments can give you this much, a night's shelter, but that's all. There was such a temple in northern Japan run by two brothers. The elder brother was very learned and the young brother was rather stupid, and he had only one eye. Two types of persons are needed to run a temple. A learned person and a very stupid one. And this is how all temples are run. Two types of persons. The learned who have become the priests, and the stupid who follow them. This is how every temple is run. So these stories are not just the stories, they are indications to particular facts. If the stupid people disappear from the earth, there will be no temple. If learned people disappear from the temples, there will be no temples. A duality is needed for a temple to exist. That's why you cannot find God in a temple, because you cannot find him in a duality. These temples are inventions of the clever people to exploit the stupid. All temples are inventions. Clever people exploiting. They have become the priests. Priests are the most clever people. They are the greatest exploiters. And they exploit in such a way that you cannot even revolt against them. They exploit you for your own sake. They exploit you for your own good. Priests are the most clever because they spin theories out of nothing. All the theologies, all that they have created. Tremendous cleverness is needed to create religious theories. And they go on creating such big edifices that it is almost impossible for an ordinary man to enter in those edifices. And they use such jargon, they use such technical terms that you cannot understand what they are talking. And when you cannot understand, you think they are very profound. Whenever you cannot understand the thing, you think it is very profound, it is beyond me. And remember this, Buddha speaks in a very ordinary language, which can be understood by anybody. It is not the language of a priest. Jesus speaks in small parables. Any uneducated man can understand it. Never uses any religious jargon. Mahavir talks, gives his teachings in the language of the most ordinary and common. Mahavir and Buddha never used Sanskrit. Never. Because Sanskrit was the language of the priest, the Brahmin. Sanskrit is the most difficult language. Priests have worked it so difficult. They have polished and polished and polished. The very word Sanskrit means polishing. Refining. They have refined it to such a pitch that only if you are very, very learned, you can understand what they are saying. Otherwise, it is beyond. Buddha used the language of the people, Pali. Pali was the language of the people, of the villagers. Mahavir used Prakrit. Prakrit is the unrefined form of Sanskrit. Prakrit is the natural form of Sanskrit. No grammar, not much. The scholar has not entered yet. He has not refined the words, so they become beyond. But priests have been using Sanskrit. They still use. Nobody understands Sanskrit now, but they go on using Sanskrit because their whole profession depends in creating a gap, not a bridge, in creating a gap. If the common people cannot understand, only then they can survive. If the common people understands what they are saying, they are lost because they are saying nothing. Once Mullah Nasruddin went to a doctor, and doctors have learned the trick from the priests. They write in Latin and Greek. And they write in such a way that even if they have to read it again, it is difficult. Nobody should understand what they are writing. So Mullah Nasruddin went to a doctor and he said, listen, be plain, just tell me the fact, don't use Latin and Greek. The doctor said, if you insist, and if you allow me to be frank, you are not ill at all, you are just plain lazy. Nasruddin said, okay, thank you. Now, write in Greek and Latin, so I can show it to my family. The clever has always been exploiting the common. That's why Buddha, Jesus, Mahavir were never respected by Brahmins, scholars, clever ones, because these are destructive. They are destroying their whole business. If people understand, then there is no need for the priest. Why? Because priest is a mediator. He understands the language of the God. He understands your language. He translates your language into the language of the God. That's why they say Sanskrit is Deo Bhasa, the language of the God. You don't know Sanskrit? I know. So I become the intermediate link. I become the interpreter. You tell me what you want, and I will tell it in Sanskrit to the God, because he understands only Sanskrit. And of course, you have to pay for it. These are the two types which are needed for a temple. There was such a temple run by two brothers. The elder brother was very learned, and the young brother was rather stupid, and he had only one eye. What is the symbolism of one eye in this story? A stupid person is always one-pointed. He never hesitates. He is always certain. And a learned person is always dual. He hesitates. He continuously divides himself into two. He is always in argument within. A monologue continues inside. He knows both the sides. A learned man is duality, two eyes. A stupid man is one-eyed. He is always certain. He has no arguments. He is not divided. That's why, if you look at a stupid person looks more like a saint than a learned man. If you look at a saint, you will have something of the similar in him also, of the stupid, of the fool. The quality differs, but something is the same. The level differs. The fool is just on the first ladder and the saint is on the last ladder. But both are at the ends. The fool does not know, that's why he is simple, one-eyed. The saint knows, that's why he is simple. He is also one-eyed. He calls it the third eye. The two eyes have disappeared into the third. He is also one-eyed, one. He is a unity. And a fool is also a unity. What is the difference? Ignorance has also an innocence about it, just like wisdom has innocence about it. And the learner is just in between. He is ignorant and thinks he is wise. And this is the division of the learned man. He is ignorant and thinks he is wise. He is neither at this level nor at that. He hangs in between. That's why he is always in tension. An ignorant man is relaxed. A wise man is relaxed. The ignorant man has not started his travel. He is at home. The wise man has reached the goal. He is at home. The learner is in between, seeking shelter in some monastery. Even for one night, it is okay. He is in wandering. Buddhist bhikkhus have been wanderers. And Buddha has said, be a wanderer unless you reach. Be a wanderer, not only inside but outside also. Be a wanderer unless you reach. Don't stop before it. When you have reached, when you have become a Siddha, a Buddha, then you are allowed to sit. Ignorance and wisdom has a quality about them which is similar, that is innocence. Neither is cunning. So sometimes it has happened, a man of God has been known as a foolish man, a fool, God's fool. Saint Francis is known as God's fool. He was. But to be a God's fool is the greatest wisdom possible. Because the ego is lost. You don't say that you know. So you are a fool because you don't claim knowledge. If you don't claim, who is going to accept that you are a knower? Even if you claim, nobody accepts. You have to hammer it on others' heads. You have to make them silent, argue it. When they cannot say anything, then by a grudging heart, they accept that maybe you are. But they will say always maybe. They will keep the possibility that someday they can deny it. And if you don't claim, who is going to accept you? And if you say yourself that I am ignorant, I know nothing, who is going to think that you are a knower? People will accept it immediately. If you say I don't know, they will accept it immediately. They will say we knew it before. We accept it. We totally agree with you that you don't know. God's fool. If you read Dostoevsky's, one of the greatest novels, then you will feel what this God's fool means. Dostoevsky has in his many novels one character always who is the God's fool. In Brothers Karamazov it is there. He is innocent. You can exploit him. Even if you exploit him, he will trust you. You can destroy him, but you cannot destroy his trust. And that is the beauty. What happens to you? If one man deceives you, whole humanity becomes the deceiver. If one man deceives you, you have lost your trust about man, not about this man, about whole humanity. If 2-3 persons deceive you, you take the judgment that there is no man worth believing. All trust is gone. It seems that you wanted from the very beginning not to trust. Only these 2-3 persons have given you excuses. Otherwise you will say this man is not trustworthy, but whole humanity. I don't know, so I must trust unless the contrary is proved. And if you are really a trusting man, you will say not only this man totally is untrustworthy this moment, this man was untrustworthy, but next moment who knows? Because saints become sinners, sinners become saints. Life is a movement, nothing is static. At this moment the man was weak, but next moment he may gain control and he will not deceive again. So next day if he comes, you will believe him again, because this day is different, this man is different. The Ganges has flown so much. It is not the same river. Once it happened, one man came to Mullah Nasruddin and asked for some money. Nasruddin knew this man, knew well that this money is not going to be returned back. But it was such a small sum that he thought, let him take it, even if he is not going to return. Nothing is lost. So for such a small sum, why say no? So he gave him the money. After 3 days, the man returned. Nasruddin was surprised. It seemed impossible. It is a miracle that this man has returned. After 2-3 days, the man came again and asked for a big sum. Nasruddin said, now, last time you deceived me. He said, last time you deceived me. Now I am not going to allow it again. The man said, what are you saying? Last time I returned the money. He said, okay, you returned, but you deceived, because I was never believing it, that you will return. But this time, no. Enough is enough. Last time you behaved contrary to my expectation, but enough. Now I'm not going to give it to you. This is how the cunning mind works. One was ignorant in the temple, a simple man, one-eyed, certain. One was a learned man. And the learned man is always tired, because he is working so hard about nothing. So busy without business, he is always tired. One evening, a wandering monk came to ask for lodging. The elder brother was very tired, as he had been studying for many hours. You cannot find a learned man and not tired. Go and look. Go to the pandits of Kasi and look. Always tired, always tired. Working so hard with words. Remember, even a laborer is not so tired, because he is working with life. When you are working only with words, futile words, just with the head, you get tired. Life is invigorating. Life rejuvenates. If you go in the garden and work, you perspire, but you are gaining more energy. You are not losing. You go for a walk, you gain more energy, because you are living a moment. Just you close yourself in your study, and with words, you go on thinking and thinking and thinking. It is such a dead process. You will be tired. A learned man is always tired. A fool is always fresh. A saint is also always fresh. They have many qualities similar. So he told the younger brother to go and take the debate. Request that the dialogue be in silence, said the elder brother, because he knew that this my brother is just stupid. So silence is golden if you are stupid, and silence is golden if you are a saint also. If you know something, you will remain silent. If you don't know, it is better to remain silent. A wise man becomes silent because he knows, and whatsoever he knows cannot be said. A fool has to be silent Because whatsoever he says, he will be caught. A fool can deceive if he is silent, but he cannot deceive if he speaks. Because whatsoever comes out of him will bring his foolishness. This learned brother knew well that this younger brother is not a man of words. He is a simple man, innocent, ignorant. So he said, request that the dialogue be in silence. A little later, the traveler came to the elder brother and said, what a wonderful fellow your brother is. This other man must have been also a learned man. And if a fool is silent, he can defeat a learned man. If you speak, you will be caught, because then you enter into the world of the learned man. With words, you cannot win. This other man was also a learned man. A man of words, it would have been very difficult for him to remain silent and debate. How to discuss? If you are not allowed to speak, just by gestures, the whole thing becomes dumb and your whole cleverness is lost. Because if you are not allowed to speak, that is your only efficiency. So if a learned man is to remain silent, he can be defeated by a fool also. Because his whole efficiency is lost. It belongs to the words. In silence he is a fool. This is the meaning. That's why pundits will never be silent. They are always chattery. If nobody is there, they are chatting with themselves. But they are chattery. They go on talking and talking and talking within and without. Because through this talking, their efficiency grows greater and greater. They become more and more proficient. But if they encounter silence suddenly, all their art is gone. They are more stupid than a stupid man. Even a stupid man can defeat them. They are out of their professional world. They are simply put off. He must have been in a very great difficulty. He said, what a wonderful fellow your brother is. He has won the debate very cleverly, so I must move on. Good night. If you encounter a learned man, remain silent. Face him with gestures. You will defeat him. Because he knows nothing about gestures. He knows nothing about silence. Really, it is very difficult for him to remain without words. Immediately he thought that he has been defeated, he must move on and reach another monastery before it is too late, and find a fellow who can debate with him in words, intellectually. Gesture is alive. When you move your hands, your whole being moves it. When you look with your eyes, your whole being pours through it. When you walk as a whole man. Your legs alone cannot walk, but your head alone can go on spinning and spinning. The head can become autonomous. No other part of the body can become autonomous. So if you want to study a man, don't listen to what he says. Rather look how he behaves. How he comes in the room, how he sits, how he walks, how he looks. Look at his gestures. They will reveal the truth. Words are deceivers. We talk not to reveal but to hide. So be silent and look at a person. How he stands, how he sits, how he looks, what gestures he is making. Body language is truer than your head language. And body language is very, very natural, comes from the very source. So it is very difficult to deceive through it. You may be something else, but your face goes on saying something else. You may be saying that I am right, but your eyes, your very way, the way you are standing says that you know you are wrong. You may be swaying through words that you are confident, but your whole body gives a tremble and shows that you are not confident. When a thief enters, he enters in a different way. When a liar appears, he appears in a different way. When a man of truth walks, he walks differently. He is nothing to hide. He has nothing to deceive. He is true. His walk is innocent. Just do something that you have to hide. Then watch yourself. You will say everything is different. Even while walking, you are hiding something. Your stomach is strained. You are alert. Your eyes are looking everywhere. Somebody is looking or not. Whether I am caught or not. Your eyes are sly. They are not pools of innocence. Cunning. Watch your body movements. They will give you a truer picture of yourself. Don't listen to words. This I have to do continuously. People come to me with all sorts of deceptions. I have to look at their gestures, not what they say. They may be touching my feet, and their whole gesture is showing ego. So that touching of feet is useless. They are manipulating it. They are not only deceiving me, they are deceiving themselves. Their whole gesture says ego. And whatsoever they say through words is humbleness. You cannot deceive through the body. Body is truer than your mind. And all religions which have been invented by the priests say to you, be against the body and be with the mind. Because a priest lives in the mind, exploits through the mind with the body. It is impossible to exploit. Body is authentic. Centuries of inauthentic living also have not been able to destroy the authenticity of the body. The body remains authentic. It shows clearly who you are. He has won the debate very cleverly. So I must move on. Good night. Well, said the. Before you go, said the elder brother, please relate to me the dialogue. He must have been puzzled. How this stupid brother of his can be clever? What has happened? He is a perfect fool. How he could discuss, how he could debate, how could he win? So he asked, before you go, please relate to me the dialogue. Well, said the traveler, first I held up one finger to represent Buddha. Because a man of learning, even while he is making gestures, uses gesture as words. Because he knows only one language. If he kisses his beloved, inside he will say the word kiss. This is the foolishness. You are kissing, no need to repeat inside, kiss. But he will. You watch yourself. While making love, he will inside say, I am making love. What nonsense. Nobody is asking, nobody is there to be told. Why you go on repeating? Whenever you do something, why you verbalize it? Because without verbalizing, you are not at ease. You are at ease only with words. With God, you cannot be at ease. With the word God, it is okay. That's why a man of learning will go to the temple, to the mosque, to the church. There also he goes on chattering. He will chatter with the God, but words. Kierkegaard, Soren Kierkegaard has said that when I first entered into the church, I used to talk. I used to say, complain, pray. But then by and by, it felt foolish. I am talking to him. And I am not giving any chance, any opportunity for him to talk to me. And it is better to listen. When you are before God, it is better to listen. So he dropped talking. By and by he dropped all prayer. He will just go in the church and sit silently. But in his silence also there were words inside. He was not using them outside, but inside they were revolving. So by and by he has to drop the words inside also. Then only listening becomes possible. Then you enter a totally different dimension of listening, of passivity, of receptivity. You become a womb. Then you can receive the truth. Then you are not talking. Then you are not aggressive. Then only God is working and you are allowing him to work. Then he became absolutely silent. And then he stopped going to the church. So somebody asked, why? Why you have stopped going to church? He said, now I have learned what church means. That only means to be silent and to be listening. That can be done anywhere. And it is better to do it somewhere else because many other people go there in the church chattering. They disturb me. It is better under a tree. It is better under the sky. The church is greater there, more natural. And if you have to be silent, then God is everywhere. If you have to talk, then go to the temple. But if you have to be silent, why go anywhere? He is everywhere, but you cannot be silent. You do something and you repeat inside. You feel hunger and you say, I am hungry. Hunger is not enough to feel. Unless you say you are not at ease, you have become addicted to words. This man, a learned man he must have been, really a perfect learned man. Well, he said, first I held up one finger to represent Buddha. Then your brother held up two fingers to represent Buddha and his teaching, the Dhamma. A man who cannot use a gesture without words will interpret the other's gestures also in words. Now look at the link, what is happening. And the way you interpret your word, you will link the other's gesture also to the same. He was thinking this finger, one finger, represents. Finger represents nobody. Finger is enough unto itself. A finger is just a finger. Why make it a representative? It is not a representative to anybody. And the finger is so beautiful. Why represent anything? But the mind always loves second-hand things. The finger is not enough. It must represent somebody. If you look at a flower, you cannot look at the flower directly, immediately. It must represent. So you say, just looks like my wife's face. Even the moon. You say, looks like my beloved's face. What nonsense. The moon is moon. And this man, when he will look at his beloved's face, will say, looks like the moon. Neither moon is enough unto itself, nor the beloved's face is enough unto itself. And everything is enough unto itself. Nobody is representing anybody. Everybody is representing only oneself. Everyone is original, unique. No one is a carbon copy. When you say the finger represents Buddha, Buddha has become the original and the finger has become the carbon copy. Now this Buddha cannot allow it. I cannot allow it. The finger is so beautiful, not representing anybody. And if you think your finger represents Buddha, then the other's two fingers will represent Buddha and his Dhamma, his teaching. Because you understand the other, not listening to the other. You understand the other by listening to your own mind. You interpret the other. When I say something, never believe that you have heard the same. When I say something, you hear something. But that is not related to me. It is linked with your own thought process. His thought process was, this finger represents Buddha. Then the other was saying, two fingers. And he is blissfully unaware what he means. You cannot understand the other if you have a word inside. Because then everything links with your word, with your thinking process. And then it is colored. He thought that he is saying two things are there, not one. Buddha and his Dhamma, his teaching, his law. So I held up three fingers. Look at the link inside. You are not communicating with the other at all. You are communicating with yourself. This is what madness means. Madness means not relating to the other, just going inside, linking your new moment with the past, new experience with the past, interpreting, coloring it. So I held up three fingers, because if he says Buddha, Dhamma, I will say Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. Buddha, his teaching and his followers. Three are there. These are the three Buddhist centers. When a bhikkhu wants to be initiated, becomes a bhikkhu, he says, Buddham saranam gacchami. I go, I take shelter into Buddha. Dhammam saranam gacchami, I take shelter into the teaching. Sangham saranam gacchami, I take shelter in the Sangha, in the followers of Buddha. These are three centers, three jewels of Buddhism. But this man is not looking at what the other man is doing. Totally unrelated. So he raised three fingers, so I held up three fingers to represent Buddha, his teaching and his followers. Then your clever brother shook his clenched fist in my face to indicate that all these come from one realization. With that, the traveler went. A little later, the younger brother came in looking very distressed. "I understand you won the debate," said the elder brother. "Won? Nothing," said the younger. "That traveler is a very rude man." "Ah," said the elder brother, "tell me the subject of the debate." "Why," said the younger brother, "the moment he saw me, he held up one finger to insult me. I'm having only one eye." You understand according to yourself. You read a book, you understand only that which you already know. And you listen, but you interpret with the past. Your past comes in. A man with one eye is always aware of the wound. He is carrying a wound. Everywhere he is looking for the insult. Nobody is worried about you. But if you have an inferiority, then you are looking somebody who is going to insult you. You are certain about that. And then you will interpret. The other may be saying Buddha. You will see he is showing that you have only one eye. Nobody is bothered with your eyes. But we interpret according to our understanding. One man reached Bayezid, a Sufi mystic, and asked him. He said, "Come after 1 year, because right now you are ill. Your inside is in a turmoil, and I cannot utter the truth. Because you will not understand it, you will misunderstand it. So for 1 year, try to be healthy, silent, meditative, and then come. If I feel that you can listen, then I will tell. Otherwise, you go to somebody else." The man listened, went back. In 1 year, made every effort to be healthy, silent, peaceful, but never came back again. So Bayezid inquired, "What happened to that seeker?" Somebody said, "We asked him why you are not coming. He said, 'Now there is no need to come, because I can understand from here where I am what Bayezid can say.'" This is a paradox. When you are not ready, you ask, but then nothing can be said to you. When you are ready, you don't ask, but only then something can be said to you. If you are one-eyed, you are always looking for insults. And if you are looking for insults, you will find them. This is the problem. If you are looking for something, this is the misfortune, you will find it. Not that anybody is insulting you. You will find it. So don't look for such things. Otherwise you will find them everywhere. Somebody will laugh. Not at you. Because who you are? Why you think yourself to be in the center of the world? This is an egoist trend. You are passing a street and somebody laughs and you think they are laughing at me. Why at you? Who are you? Why you take it for granted? that you are the center of the whole world. If somebody laughs at you, somebody insults you, somebody is angry against you. In my whole life, I have not met a single person who was angry against me. Many people were angry, but nobody was angry against me because I am not the center of the world. Why this would be angry against me? They are angry. That is something linked with their own being, not with me. I have come across people who were even violent to me, but they were not violent to me. This violence was coming out of their past. I was not the cause of its orientation. I may be the excuse, but I was not the cause. But excuse, if I was not there, somebody else would have done the same. Somebody else would have become the victim. So it is just coincidental that I was there. When your wife goes mad at you, it is coincidental that you are there. Escape. And don't think too much that she was angry against you. She was angry, you were there. That's all. She would have been angry at the servant, at the child, at the piano, at anything. Everybody lives through his own past. Only Buddhas live in the present. Nobody lives in the present. This man thought, okay, so he is saying that I have got only 1 hour. He is rude. He is insulting me, having only 1 hour, but because he was a stranger, I thought I would be polite. But the moment you think you should be polite, you are not polite. How can you be? And the idea has entered. If you think the other is rude, you have become rude. It is not a question now. Because the very idea the other is rude is because your rudeness has come up. Through your rudeness, the other is appearing rude. You have colored the other. The other is showing his finger, representing Buddha. He has not looked even at your eye. He is not concerned. He wants just a center. A Buddha. And the interpretation that he is showing that I have got only 1 hour. He is rude. When you think about someone that he is rude, look back. You are rude. That's why you interpret it. But why you are rude? Because your rudeness is a way of protecting your wound. Those people who are rude are always suffering from inferiority. If a person is not in any way burdened with a complex of inferiority, he will not be rude. Rudeness is his protection. Through rudeness, he protects his wound. He says, I will not allow you to touch my wound. I will not allow you to hit me. He protects. But protection becomes projection. He thinks that you are rude. Only then he can be rude. This is the way how to be rude. First you have to prove that the other is rude. And still your ego says, I will try to be polite. When you are polite, your politeness is nothing but a facet. Inside, rudeness has entered. Sooner or later, it will explode. But I thought because he was a stranger, I would be polite. So I held up 2 fingers to congratulate him on having 2 eyes. This is just false. How can you congratulate any person if you feel insulted that you have got one eye and the others have got two, how can you congratulate? Deep down, you can be jealous. How can you congratulate? How can congratulation come out of jealousy? But your all congratulations come out that way. It is a polite way. It is culture, etiquette. If you are defeated by someone, even then you congratulate for his victory. What falseness! If you were such a person, you would not have fought at all. When you were fighting, you were the enemy, and now you are defeated, and you go and congratulate him. But deep down there is jealousy. You are boiling. You would like to kill this man. You will try. In the future you will see. But society needs etiquette. Why society needs etiquette? Because everybody is so violent. If there is no etiquette, we will be at each other's throats continuously. Society has to create barriers. You should not be allowed to reach at the other's throat continuously, otherwise life will be impossible. But you are at each other's throats continuously. Your etiquette, your culture, civilized ways, manners are just to hide the fact. They don't allow a real civilization to happen, a false thing. That's why every 10 years a great war is needed, in which all etiquette, all manners, all morality is thrown away, and you can run at each other's throats without any guilt. Then killing becomes the game. The more you murder, the greater you are. The more you are rude, the greater a warrior you are. And back to the country, you will be received as heroes. Padma Bhushan, Mahavir Chakra, Victoria Cross will be given to you. You will receive medals. For what these medals are given? To become barbarians, to become barbarous, to become murderers. And because you have been a great murderer, so this medal is given by the country. And we call these countries civilized. And murderers are recognized. Murders are appreciated, but mass murderers, individual murderer, you will be in the jail. That cannot be allowed. Only sometimes, when the whole society goes mad, that is war. Everything is put aside. Your real nature is allowed. That's why everybody feels happy when there is a war. Should be otherwise. Nobody should feel happy when there is a war, but everybody feels happy because now you are allowed to be animals. You wanted always to be that. Your culture, etiquette, manners are just polished ways to hide the animal behind. This man, so I held up two fingers to congratulate him on having two eyes. At this, the impolite wretch held up three fingers to show that we had but three eyes between us. Whatsoever you do, your wound will come in. The other is saying the three jewels of Buddha. But for you, it is just the wound coming back. You tried to be polite. You tried not to be rude. You tried to congratulate even. But you are you, your mind continues. Now he is showing three fingers again. Your mind comes and he says, this wretch. He is saying that we have three eyes between two of us. Again he is showing that you have one eye. Now this is too much. Now enough. So I got mad and threatened to punch his nose, so he went. He was mad from the very beginning. Before they ever met, he was mad. Because you cannot create madness if it is not already there. You can create only things which are already there. Your creation is not out of nothing. It is only unmanifested state becomes a manifested state. Anger is there. You need not create it. Somebody becomes the excuse, it comes up. You are not angry at him. He is not the cause. You were carrying the anger. He has become the excuse. Madness is inside. Nobody can make you mad if you are not mad already. But we always think that somebody makes us angry, somebody makes us depressed, somebody makes us this and that. Nobody makes you anything. Even if you are left alone, you will be mad, you will be angry. Even if the whole world disappears, there will be moments when you will be sad, there will be moments when you will be happy. There will be moments when you will be angry. There will be moments you will be very forgiving. Although there is nobody. It is your inner story that unfolds. This is what a man of understanding comes to realize, that the whole thing is an unfoldment of me. You just give me the opportunity, the situation. But the whole thing is an unfoldment of me. A seed falls on the ground. It sprouts. A tree starts growing. The soil, the air, the rains, the sun, they all are giving just the opportunity. But the tree was hidden in the seed. You carry the whole tree of your unfoldment. Everybody else becomes the opportunity. Whenever anything happens, don't look out, look within. Because the thing as it is happening is linked with your past, not with the person here. I got mad and threatened to punch his nose, so he went. The elder brother laughed. The elder brother could see both the standpoints. He could see that the learned wanderer never talked to this man, never gestured to this man. He could see this stupid brother never understood what was gestured. They remain untouched. The abyss was there, no bridge. They debated. They concluded. One was defeated, one has become victorious, and they never met. Not for a single moment. He laughed. This laughter can become enlightenment. This laughter can become a profound understanding, a transformation. If this laughter is not about the stupidity of this brother or the stupidity of that wanderer, if this laughter is about the whole situation, how the head functions, how two heads can never meet, how two pasts can never meet, how two minds always remain separate. There is no way for them to meet and mingle into each other. If he laughs at the whole situation, not at this brother or at that learned wanderer. If he laughs at this brother and at that learned wanderer, this laughter cannot become enlightenment. He will remain the same. But if he laughs at the whole situation, how the mind functions, how the mind argues, how the mind goes on, within itself never moving out, how the mind is always closed, it is never open. How the mind is just the inner dream, a nightmare. If he understands that, this laughter will become a shattering. The pail, the whole pail will fall down. The water will flow out. No water, no moon.